You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Thursday, February 12th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live just steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the fast-track assault by the Obama administration continues, aided and abetted by Nancy Pelosi. Also on the program today, the Obama administration heads to Congress with a sort of partially looking for legislation to both inhibit and strengthen the president's ability to wage war. Meanwhile, more investigations upon more investigations with the Christie administration, while Scott Walker is in Britain, smart enough not to answer any questions. He's punting on global warming. That would be the responsible thing to do. Meanwhile, Governor Kitzhaber in Oregon. Such a, like, small relative to when you just read half a page about what's going on in New Jersey. Small scandal. Sounds like he was going to resign, then changed his mind. We'll get to Jeb Bush, CIO. What do they call it?
Chief Technology Officer.
CTO. Chief BIO, BIGOT, too, I think. And we'll give you a little bit of a preview of King v. Burwell on the program today, as well as reports of a ceasefire deal between Russia and Ukraine, although also now seeing some notice of tanks entering into Ukraine from Russia, but that may just
be. We signed the agreement. There we go.
Well, that may just be, actually, the agreement. Well, let me just say this and then go. The agreement calls for Russia to take their weapons out of Ukraine. Weapons that they've never acknowledged have gone in. So they may need to bring weapons in, ostensibly, to take all of them out. I'm serious about it.
We will go in with tank, and then we will go in, and then we will leave. So you will see that we take the weapons.
We come in with the 50. We leave with 52.
We take all of them.
Yeah, no, that is actually, I think that's a good call. Exactly. Go in with 50, leave with 55, 52.
Oh, we just didn't do the number. You didn't. You thought you saw 50 go in. It was 55.
You did not see real number. We'll leave it now. It's America's fault. I got to go. I am Majority Report show because you are West End and Peerless sellouts. Right. I'm also a men's rights activist. We'll call Matt Bender, too. You don't have real rape number because you are feminist.
Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
I will. We're also going to go over. We'll do a little, What is the word? Epilogue to the debate I had with Professor Walter Block yesterday. Got some great response from you folks regarding it, and some response that I think, you know, people sometimes I think miss the point of why I have these debates. And we will talk about that. Also, we'll talk a little bit about Jon Stewart. There was an interesting – I was basically done. I went on the All In with Chris Hayes last night to talk about Jon Stewart. And, you know, there's not a lot left for me to say, although I did see a piece by Jamel Bowie at Slate, which I thought was a good piece, but I thought was a little bit off. So we'll talk about Jon Stewart in that context. And I will say this, folks. I appreciate my father called me last night. He's like, "You really should really think about doing this Jon Stewart thing." What do you mean?
No, Dad, leave me alone. I have my podcast.
No, well, he said to me, "Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure that would be something that I would want to do because it's a different. I mean, there's a reason why John Oliver, I think, wanted to do something once a week on HBO, and it was no mystery that Stewart's days were numbered. I mean, there was speculation that he wasn't going to return last time his contract was up. So I think I am quite convinced that people on the show were aware that he might be leaving. I think John Oliver said, "You know what? I'm very happy to make a couple million dollars a year doing a once a week show on HBO where I don't have to be less political than I want to be." I'm speculating. I don't know. But my father did call me. He's like, "You should really think about this." And I was like, "Well, I gave my standard answer, which is, you know, you really should be an executive at Comedy Central." But with that said, folks, apparently the PCCC put up a poll, and they just sent me the first poll results. I guess there's a thank you to Jon Stewart, which I – no, okay. But well, I'm not saying that's wrong. That's fine. But there is a poll. Now, I will say this. I came in right in the middle of the pack. John Oliver, 44%. Well, he's already got a job. Amy Poehler, 10%. Samantha Bee, 8%. I'm sort of surprised. Why wouldn't you want Samantha Bee? She's on that show.
That's who I want.
That's who I want.
I'm a huge Samantha Bee fan.
I think Samantha Bee would be the best choice. Jessica Williams, 8%. She seems to me to be too new. That's my sense.
I think she's funny, but I think Samantha Bee is amazing.
Asif Manvi, also great. But I just think Samantha Bee has host written all over her. But she may not want to do it. Brian Williams comes in at 2% of the vote. But he is tied with Sam Cedar at 2%. Ah. That's right. And Jason Jones, who also I think is quite good on that show, 2%. Jon Stewart came in with 1%, which is weird.
Well, maybe if you don't get The Daily Show, Sam, you could host NBC Nightly News.
My dad said I should put myself in the running for that, too.
That's it. And lie about our rock stories with the best of them.
Oh, come on now.
All right. Oh, whoa, really? Of all of the things, that one's too far.
There was
desecrating the memory of Nelson Mandela, doing just a juvenile Russian impression,
right,
and one joke about Brian Williams.
Kicking Brian Williams
O.
while he's down?
Okay.
Come on. There was a I don't know if I want to go into that right now with those pictures. Yeah, I don't want to go into that. Before we get to, I want to do the roundup of yesterday's debate. But before we do, let's get to this sound because this was pretty crazy. And I don't know, we may eject freebies and do like a teaser Thursday today, teaser Tuesday on Thursday. Now, look, I understand. Fox is outnumbered. It really is just, it's like throwing catnip. I mean, it's I get it. But the fact remains, people, is that there are a lot of people who watch these shows. And this is like an insight into what the theme is on Fox that day or week. Because they throw it out there. It's a mosh pit of stupidity, yes. But it's a mosh pit of everything that's going on at Fox and in the right wing brain. So here you have Andrea Tantaros, Harris Faulkner, Kennedy, from, you know, she's the libertarian, and Melissa Francis talking about, I guess, President Obama made the point that more people are affected by climate change than terrorism, and this basically drives them insane. Here it is. So insane, they actually came up with that theme song. Go.
Welcome back to Outnumbered. Well, is the White House tone deaf? That's what many are asking after this from White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest when asked yesterday about something that President Obama said in an interview about climate change. Listen.
The president's saying, as he seems to be implying here, that the threat of climate change is greater than the threat of terrorism.
I think, John, the point that the president is making is that there are many more people on an annual basis who have to confront the impact, the direct impact on their lives of climate change or on the spread of a disease than on terrorism.
Oh, yeah. You heard that right. The president, according to his spokesman, believes drastic changes to the environment pose a bigger threat in the daily lives of Americans than terrorism. And those remarks coming the same day we learned of the death of Kayla Mueller, the fourth American to die in the hands of ISIS since last summer. Harris, how many Americans have died from climate change?
Well, I can't give you an exact number.
700 million. It's 850 million, Kennedy.
Wow.
There have been so beheadings by the climate. Yes.
Are you know being that facetious?
Of course, Harris, you should know me better by now.
You're also making the same facetious point that I have read made, and that's that climate change cannot dress up, cross continent borders, look like a neighbor, plan, plot, sit in the cut, and then blow something up.
Wait, but that's not Harris.
You understand that climate change doesn't have to do that. It doesn't have to disguise itself. We can't stop it by putting up borders. I mean, I can't quite tell if they actually believe what they're saying or they're just being, I mean, the idea, it's 800 million have died as opposed to the four we just teased this segment with. Well, no, it's also possible that maybe when you have extreme weather, you have people who die heart attacks because of snow or floods. They die in floods like in Katrina or in massive heat waves like they did in, I think it was France a couple years ago or Chicago. And you have hurricanes and – but let's continue.
Saying,
how
guys,
incredibly toned up, though, if you're Kayla Mueller's family and you hear the president say that climate change is more dangerous than terrorism, you would vomit all over the White House.
But that's if you take it literally.
Can
and Mark,
I jump
you're
in
about
here?
The point
I'm so
out outnumbered. But
now, I'm going to be fair to Kennedy and say that she was not being literal when she said you would vomit all over the White House, because the White House is rather large and it would be really hard to do that. But what shocks me is that if they're so concerned about Kayla Mueller and what her parents are saying, then why aren't they doing a segment on their buddy Debbie Schlussel, one of these right-wing radio hosts, who posted something the day before they were talking? Kayla Mueller, dead ISIS hostage, was Jew-hating anti-Israel bitch. I imagine Kayla Mueller's family probably doesn't appreciate that.
And I think Debbie's house is much smaller than the White House, so you could possibly vomit all over it.
Indeed.
Matt Binder, Jew hater.
Or Joel Pollack, who I think is he the publisher of Breitbart.com?
He's an editor of one of the verticals.
Okay. Sad that Kayla Mueller was an anti-Israel activist. If she understood both sides, she might have avoided idealizing the enemy that killed her. So saying that that Kayla Mueller was in some way a pro-ISIS would not upset her parents. I mean, look, I have no problem. People want to write this, it's certainly their business. But if Fox is really looking something to get outraged by, Indeed. Or what is this blog, Bare Naked Islam? Hostage Kayla Miller killed by the Islamic State deserves no tears. The myth that this ISIS hostage was a wonderful, altruistic young woman is a lie. She was an anti-Israel activist and a human shield for Palestinian terror groups. Unbelievable. Continue.
Let me just say this, okay. The timing might have been off, and I'll take out the might, okay? But what they're saying, and he clarified very eloquently, if we have to replay it, we will. Mm-hmm. He's just saying it affects more people in terms of numbers.
I don't know. I felt pretty affected by what was going on with Kayla Mueller yesterday. No, I think this is all about that the president wants to make corporations the enemy. That's much easier. He's so much more comfortable fighting back against the 1%, against companies who are changing the environment, rather than against ISIS.
No,
and so this is a more comfortable...
Wait, no, I don't think she means to concede that companies are changing the environment or whatever that she's trying to say there. But who is the elementary school teacher that they brought in to try and talk to these people on Outnumbered? What's that guy's name?
Oh, it's a Mark Iglarsh.
And is he an elementary school teacher that they brought in to sort of say, like, you know, we need someone who's going to be able to communicate
now,
with
Mr. Iglarsh, well, he is here.
He's going to explain to you. Is there any more to this?
Yes, you got to listen to these last 20 seconds.
No, I think this is all about that the president wants to make corporations the enemy. That's much easier. He's so much more comfortable fighting back against the 1%, against companies who are changing the environment, rather than against ISIS.
No,
and so this is a more comfortable, palatable enemy
for
the White House.
Is there anything,
and ISIS, who he does not want to stand up to.
Is there anything factually incorrect about the statement that more Americans are impacted by climate change?
Mark? This is the thing. You said the timing was off. The science is off. And let me point to a very recent example. That's the most important thing. The science is off. We just had a snowstorm 2 weeks ago in New York. They told us New York City was going to get blown out. We had to give up our freedom and sit in our house. No cars on the road. Well, guess what? The models were wrong. So they got the models wrong on the science 24 hours before. How about those models 10, 20 years from now?
Let me step in there.
Wow, that is some grade A moronic attitude there. I don't know what else to call that. First of all, let's take the first things first. President Obama doesn't feel comfortable fighting ISIS. 1,900 bombing runs in 6 months.
Still feels a little awkward.
1,900.
Just don't quite feel it. You know, I mean, look, let's pound Iraq. Let's pound the Syrian border. But I got to say, guys, I don't feel comfortable in my skin about this. Probably because I'm a secret Muslim counteragent.
There you go.
But go ahead.
Yeah. 1,900 bombing sorties. And then here's the other thing. There's a difference between predicting the weather within 30 or 40 miles within a day or so, and looking at long-term trends in climate change. I don't even know how to say this without feeling like I'm talking to people who wouldn't even be able to know how to use a computer enough to hear my voice or see me. I mean, I want to say, like, well, yeah, they were 30 miles off on the snow dumps, on their computer models in predicting the weather. But that just is also missing the point. It's the depth of the stupidity there, because I actually think that they believe what they're saying, and that's what's really terrifying. They do. All right. Speaking of what's a little bit terrifying, I just want to touch on yesterday's interview, because we got a lot of people enjoyed it. One person wrote in and is like, you realize you're talking to a crazy person. And And my response is yes. And the idea that, like, why would you do this? Well, there's a simple reason why I would do it.
It's tons of fun.
Well, no, it's not just that it's tons of fun. It is tons of fun. And I think people who listen to the program for an extended period of time, particularly who listen to the fun half, know that I love to debate people on this stuff. But the reason why I do it fundamentally. And the reason why I've always done it on every radio program I've ever had, and I have welcomed conservative callers. I've gone beyond welcoming conservative callers. And that is because I am not, it is not because I think that I can convince the person I am talking to and somehow convert them. It is to display for the rest of us, and even those people who don't necessarily agree with what I'm saying, but don't necessarily agree with what the other person is saying, the ridiculousness of this other position. And so I got no problem letting Walter Block talk on this program, giving him the vast majority of time, allowing him to take his long explanations of things. And even, you know, and people were like, well, why didn't you question him on his premise that there was only 2 million Native Americans? Because it doesn't matter. If there was 100 million Native Americans when, or 2,000, his whole formula is a joke. I mean, with all due respect, it's a joke. It's a joke. The idea that we would resolve every potential question of whose ownership of property is a function of a multiple set of courts that will behave in a way that he anticipates they're going to behave. And that ultimately their authority simply gets resolved by who has enough money to buy as much guns as they can and back up those courts. And people made the point yesterday, like, my God, that's the utopia that the libertarians are promising us? But then, or the idea that somehow property is established by what the distance between planted ears of corn was in France, depending, of course, on which side of the Mississippi you're on. And if you didn't hear the debate yesterday, I'm not, this is not hyperbole on my part. This is what he based it on. I'm not reaching out of the air to bring in the most absurd examples. No, this is what it's based on. And you don't need to know any more about the libertarian philosophy as to how it ends up being either a justification for racism or an engine for it. Because if you determine what is the true, most basic, fundamental building block as to the validity of someone owning property, and it is based upon not what Native Americans did in this country or the people who are here, but no, rather what white Europeans imported and determined was going to justify property. I mean, it was a way to disenfranchise. It was either a way to disenfranchise and invalidate and delegitimize the existence of the indigenous people, or it was a way to simply justify that that had happened. I mean, it is the example that I would give would be, you know, simply to say, like, if someone who is a great baseball hitter said, I am now in charge of, you know, what merit is for athletics. And it is clearly one's capacity to hit a ball about this size with a wooden or metal bat. And everything else is secondary. We need a fundamental building block to say, what is a great athlete? And so this would be the first thing. So if you can't do that, you're not a great athlete. Oh, coincidentally, it turns out I'm really good at it.
Ah, athlete example. Very good. That's a reductio ad absurdum reductaris.
That's right.
Not as good as the age of consent example, right. But
yeah, oh my
But I mean, that is, and I wanted to go in different, I wanted to go in some different directions with the professor. We ran out of time. I didn't realize that I had said an hour. I probably had. I don't, you know, sometimes you cover yourself in that way because you're not sure where this is
going to
go.
Sam, my medication is going to be wearing off shortly, and I think I've done a very good job of remaining sort of awkwardly over-civil for this conversation. But if you keep me on for another 5 minutes, I may just say, shut up! Leave me alone! The black people and the acorns, and I'm tired of it. I just want my own private court system. Is that too much to freaking ask for?
I was cheering in my seat, though, when he did say, shut up. He didn't say it to you, but when you brought up how it was feudalism, and he went, but the king could just tell them to shut up! And I was like, yes! Yes!
But I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, and he's saying, well, I don't know if it's really feudalism, but it really is.
It's not really feudalism. It's more of a less efficient Mad Max world. Are you familiar with that film, Sam?
In Mad Max, nobody had their own, well, they had their own courts, but they didn't wear, well, they wore robes, but there was a shortage of gasoline and... So clearly, these are different examples.
No, it's the best, as he literally said. It's not feudalism, it's Hobbesian, which is shorthand for like everything you don't really want. Like, that was coined in the sense of we need these really strict and structured institutions so as to not live in that state. Not like, well, really, it's less of a feudalism and more of a man against man wild dystopia where children are ripped apart on the street.
Generally, I don't like to go down those paths with libertarians because all you do is you keep digging and digging and the hole, it gets smaller. But it almost is impossible to get to the bottom of the hole because at the bottom of the hole, you get, well, we're going to determine the legitimacy of property based upon some mores, that we established in France. Of course, it's like that's what you get at the bottom. Like this is it's like saying it's almost like trying to argue what was at the very beginning existence. I mean, there are theories, right? The Big Bang, but okay, well. We don't have to explain what happened before the Big Bang because that took place in France. And so we just imported it.
And if you're not white, then tough coconut shells, or in this case, tough acorn shells.
Sam,
excuse me.
Sam, I got your wallet.
Right.
You want it back? I'll see you your court.
I'll see you in 15 to 55 courts.
Yeah. Would you like to do my court or your court next week?
At the very least, we know there's court A, his court, court B, my court, court C.
I'm pretty sure your court was court F.
That adjudicates between those two courts. I don't know if anybody else has courts. It depends.
What are the anti-bureaucracy people? We want 75 courts to resolve a stolen wallet. What I also, like I said to you too, it also just seems to me it's sort of like debating astronomy with a Scientologist. Like it just – it's like, okay, like I guess, yes, in this world where aliens blew up a bunch of, you know, asteroids before the Big Bang, I guess, yes, if I accept that premise, everything else you're saying makes
– But I mean that's the point though is that they do not admit there's a fundamental premise. Which is, you know, in this instance, when it comes to property, it's that, look, we didn't know where to start, so we just chose the one that would ensure that we ended up with the property.
Let's just, we can all agree that having sex with a 5-year-old is wrong. But that time I had sex with a 16-year-old,
no,
I don't know.
All right, come on. All right, let's take a break and head into... the funner hat. But I do want to talk. I mean, well, let me just touch on this piece, too. You know, I had mentioned this the other day about that. It occurred to me as I walked down to work that you get screwed as you're walking down the street, even in Brooklyn. I mean, never mind. I mean, in a very densely populated area, if one property owner decides not to shovel out in front of their store or their lot or whatever it is. And it is a perfect example of why this is something, you know, we have the streets are all plowed, right? If they're not, it's a major, major F up by city government. But if there is a portion of the sidewalk that is not, and you're someone who has trouble getting around, if you're a 75-year-old man or woman, or you walk with a cane or whatever it is, I mean, you're done. You can't go anywhere. If one person on the whole block or the whole street hasn't shoveled their walk, and there's no amount of fines that's going to make a difference for that person. And there was a story in Ann Arbor, I guess.
Keep your mittens to yourself. Keep your mittens to yourself, old lady.
All right, I got it. There was a story in Ann Arbor where apparently a neighborhood basically came to understand that there was a problem with this. And a bunch of volunteers got around. They basically there's a neighborhood where there's 12 miles of sidewalk, and they got donations. They bought a big machine, essentially. They got volunteers to plow the sidewalks. And it all came out of this sort of realization that there was a failure, that this failure exists. And the interesting thing about it is, you read it, you say, well, there it is, private homeowners banding together in the way that the libertarians would assume everybody would. But in the end, the guy who organized the whole thing said, ultimately, he'd like to see the city take on the job of cleaning the sidewalks. We just want to make an example of what a neighborhood looks like through the winter if its walks are all kept clear. But equally important, we want to encourage our city officials to consider taking this task from us, since they are the rightful administrators of transportation corridors. So even the guy who organized it realizes the limitations of it, realizes it can't happen everywhere, that there's really one place, one group of people who are perfectly situated to do this thing where you cannot rely. And that's what I wanted to get into with Block, with his, you know, privatize everything. And even the Milton Friedmanites, who Block says is on one end of the spectrum, we should privatize Central Park. There'd be no Central Park if it was privatized. There wouldn't have been a Central Park in the beginning. There wouldn't have been a Central Park 10 years later, or 100 years later, or 150 years later. And as far as, you know, yesterday we, what was his name? Adam, who called in?
I don't remember his name. Nice kid.
Nice kid who was raising, I guess, a conversation that we had in December when he called in about what happens when we have no zoning and a factory comes in and essentially poisons the area in which people live, in an area of poverty, let's say, where there's no political power. And he says, well, they should just band together and as a community, and I guess ostensibly get guns or whatnot, and then drive the factory out or tell the factory to change their behavior. Well, I mean, tell that to the victims of Bhopal, which was probably the largest industrial disaster in the history of the world. I don't know how many thousands of people died and how off limits that entire area is. And then, of course, they just Union Carbide just sort of like melts away and becomes a subsidiary of, was it of DuPont now, I guess?
Yes. And 500,000 people died. And we're exposed to the gas, excuse me. It doesn't have an exact death number, but that's in 1984. And that whole, even just getting financial compensation for that, has still not even fully
happened.
And
how do you get financially compensated? I mean, if I'm a 75-year-old man, exactly. I'm walking down the sidewalk and I slip because this property owner has decided, it's not worth, I'd rather pay the fine.
Also, incidentally.
And I'll pay the fine. I slip, I fall. And what?
I'll pay the fine. I poisoned thousands of people with a gas leak and killed them. But in addition to that, the other point that doesn't work that needs to be raised too, is that the reality of how these things function is that there are parts of the world where people are attempting maybe some type of armed response to some type of factory or something that they don't want. And the apparatus of the state in the service of corporate interests is used to crush those
but
people.
From a libertarian perspective, they would say that shouldn't be the case.
But it is, in reality, the case.
Of course, because that goes back to how far apart you plant your corn.
Right.
We've already determined that this is their property. The factory is their property. It's legitimate because they planted corn a certain distance that it was similar to the way it was in France. And so their property is legitimate, whereas your property claims not so legitimate. We could go to our separate courts, and then we can go to the third court, and that third court could determine. And if that third court doesn't do it, we can go to a fourth court, and then maybe the fifth court, and then it's really just a question of who's got the army.
And not only that, I mean, this is happening in Africa right now. You have indigenous people being kicked off of land for Western corporate interests, for Saudi royal family buying up, we want fresh farmland as the climate crisis gets worse, and we don't want to be just reliant on our, you know, own bioregion.
You don't buy those models, do you?
Right. Well, it's ironically they do, actually. But it isn't even just like some disgusting thing to historically say about the Native Americans. This is playing out in the world today. That same modeling of, well, you don't have legitimate rights to where you live because you don't fit in some conceptual model we built is happening every single day.
Of course. All right. So much for Teaser Thursday. All right. Let's head into the fun half. We'll talk a little bit about John Stewart, and then also give you a little preview, I think, of King v. Burwell. Next week is I just got the script, incidentally. The Marin script.
Exciting.
Hmm.
Going to do a little sound.
We'll talk about it in the fun half. Next week I'm going to be in L.A. doing a Marin show. I don't think I'm going to have time to do anything else out there because I'm in and out, basically. They pushed it back a little bit, so I may not even be back by Monday, but the following week. But King v. Burwell, in the first week of March, I'll be down covering the Supreme Court oral arguments on King v. Burwell, which is a court case that could really destroy the Affordable Care Act. And I'm not one of those people who thinks that if it gets destroyed in this fashion, the getting rid of the mandate would have been interesting. But this getting rid of the subsidies is, well, the whole thing would just go away, and I God knows what would happen. 10 million people would probably, maybe, I don't know, 6 million people would not be able to get health insurance. It would be fascinating and horrific simultaneously. It would be interesting if the only thing that we got out of this was a Medicaid expansion. And well, I don't know. But we will talk about that. But we're going to be taking, hopefully over next week, we'll have at least an interview with the plaintiffs in this case. I just want to get you familiar with a lot of the ground, the foundations of this case and where it could go. You know, and then the irony of all of it is, of course, it gets to the Supreme Court and none of the rational arguments really make a difference. But that's important to understand, too, in the context of the Supreme Court. I mean, the last time I was down out in front of the Supreme Court, not we're actually in a building, for the last Affordable Care Act case. This was, I think, 2 years ago. During the oral arguments, every single expert, legal expert, came and sat down and talked to me about the different elements of the case. There was the issue as to whether or not the mandate was legitimate. Was it a tax provision or not? There was another element off the top of my head, I can't remember. And then just in passing, they would all bring up the question of like, is providing an expanded Medicaid, is that coercive? In other words, does the federal government, by saying, we will give you 90% of the funding of this, 95% of the funding of expanding Medicaid for 4 or 5 years, and then it will go down to like 85%. Is that
unconstitutional because it is coercive of the state. And all of them were like, no, that's, I mean, I raise it because it's part of the case, but no, that's, it doesn't really make any sense. I mean, you'd have to reverse the Commerce Clause. It's just not, it's just one of those things that, you know, and almost to a person, they all said that. One guy said, maybe it's got me a little bit concerned because I don't understand why they accepted that. So in the end, what we're watching is a court that is highly, highly political, partisan, ideological, not even in a legal construct. But with that said, you're going to know more about King v. Burwell than any other, than anybody else. Let me put it this way. Listeners of this program will know more about King v. Burwell than listeners or viewers of any other program in the world. I think that's a fair statement because, I mean, why would anybody listen to a program like that? And then you people are just one of the few people who will do it.
Great, great plug for the second half here. Let's
no,
go.
No. Now I'm going to go into the fun half. Where maybe we're not going to talk about King v. Burwell. Maybe a little bit. But I'm saying by the end.
Down there.
That's the one thing. You're going to be able to go around to the very few people who will care and say, I know anything you need to know about King v. Burwell, I can tell you. All right. Now we've even gone long on our Teaser Tuesday.
Jesus Christ. Let's get to the fun half.
646-257-3920. Folks, don't forget you can support this program by becoming a member. Join themajorityreport.com. You can also support this program if you like coffee. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your crap from there. You won't notice a difference. We get a kickback. 646-257-3920. Want to IM me? Get the app, majorityapp.com, or just get the app to listen to the show. It's free. Android and iOS. We'll be right back.
Ask her to say no.